Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of The Kevin Rose Show. Really excited to be back and at it. I am up in Portland, Oregon. Finally got my podcasting rig set up out here for the summertime. Really enjoying the weather out here, and my mom and sister live out here, so it's great to be out here with them and to also enjoy all the good restaurants. If you haven't been to Portland, it's a really fun place to visit. There's a couple restaurants. Check out Afuri, A-F-U-R-I, Afuri. And it is a really good ramen shop from a guy from Japan that came out to Portland and opened a ramen shop out here. And then also, I would say my favorites right now, another place called Ox, phenomenal steak. Another place called Tusk, which is some of the best hummus I've ever had in my life. And then, of course, the microbreweries out here are to die for. There's just so many brew pubs making their own beer, and you could just spend weeks just bouncing around different breweries and trying different beers. So I have also been trying to do some outdoor activities to burn off that beer gut, because it'll sneak up on you real quick. Speaking of beer, I am back together with my old Dignation co-host, Alex Albrecht, for this show. This is an episode. We call it Talking Tech. It's just where we get together every few months, talk about our favorite tech stories that are going on during that time. And this time we got into some real fun stuff. We were talking about flying cars, which it sounds like a, you know, futuristic 20, 30 years out, but really they are selling them now. They're not really flying cars. They're flying drones that carry humans. So those are really cool. I don't know if you guys have been tracking all the different, there's like four of them out there, four different manufacturers that are making them, but they're pretty amazing. We talk about the, augmented reality Magic Leap glasses that are coming out this summer. Also bendable phones, the new $399 Surface Go, the new version of Android P that is almost about to be released. And then of course, Bitcoin. Alex is a huge fan. I am a dabbler, and we go really deep on his adventures into Bitcoin. Now, before we get started, as you know, if you listen to my podcast in the past, one out of every four or five are actually sponsored. And that is not because no one wants to sponsor the show. I've had a lot of people reach out, but it has to be really something that I'm excited about and into and use and really believe is worthwhile to recommend to other people, because I don't want people spending their money unless it's a great product or service. And I will say the one service that I've been using for years and years is Audible. And Audible is, of course, the largest audiobook online store in the universe. And you can go to audible.com/Kevin Rose and you will get a free 30-day trial. And for me, Audible, it's pretty straightforward. We can learn a lot from books, obviously. I don't read enough physical books. I'm always on the go, and I have big chunks of time where I can learn something and then also be productive. So meaning when I'm at the gym, if I'm on the treadmill, if I'm running for a half hour, boom, Audible, 1.5 speed, jam through a book. If I'm sitting in the sauna and trying to get in some of that healthy sauna time, Audible, right there in the back of an Uber. You know, this summer that we're doing a lot of stuff outdoors, going to be going on hikes. You know, if you're out sunbathing at the beach, whatever you're doing. Oh, road trip. I took this is a true story. I went from San Francisco to Portland, drove my car, and I went through Michael Pollan's new book, which is all about his experimenting with psychedelics. It's called How to Change Your Mind. Phenomenal book. I know I mentioned it last time, got through it. It was great. I highly recommend it. It's not just a random dude doing psychedelics. This is Michael Pollan, you know, best-selling author. And he really approaches it from this idea of almost like the science behind it. So really gets into what's going on in your brain, how it can be used for people with PTSD, anxiety, people that have cancer patients that are kind of end of life, that use it to overcome their fear of death. There's just like a lot of really interesting and fascinating research that's going on in this world. And a big shout out to Tim Ferriss, who's actually helped fund a lot of this research. So thank you for that, because I know it's really changing a lot of people's lives. Anyway, Michael Pollan, How to Change Your Mind. If you don't have that, go download it. Get that on Audible. That's one of my recent favorites. Why We Sleep, Matt Walker, had him on the show. Another one to download. Lying by Sam Harris, another one of my favorites. Sapiens. I know if you've already listened to Sapiens, you're thinking, yeah, Kevin, that's like a year old. But I had probably four or five friends tell me, like, you got to read this book. And it wasn't until just recently I thought, okay, I'm going to bite the bullet and go and download it. And I did. So I don't know where I am. I'm just making book recommendations. Let's get back to the sponsor. So back to Audible. For a limited time, and I'm talking till the end of July, so a couple days from now, Amazon Prime members get the first 3 months of Audible for the price of one. So that's $4.95 a month for 3 months and then $14.95 a month thereafter. And that offer ends on July 31st, 2018. So you got to jump on that, especially if you're a Prime member. It is the absolute best time to sign up. Go to audible.com/Kevin Rose, or if you're on your mobile phone, just text Kevin Rose, all one word, to 500-500. You'll get your free book, your 30-day free trial, and they'll text you back a URL so you can sign right up. That is it. The last thing that I will mention is people sometimes have a little bit of a fear when signing up for these things. They're like, it's another monthly fee. What if I don't use the credit? The nice thing about Audible is that the credits roll over to the next month if you don't use them. So you don't have to feel that pressure of, I have to get an audiobook this month. So for example, I have, I think, 7 credits right now that are waiting in the queue for me to use. And I just use them when I'm, you know, when somebody mentions mentions a high quality book I should check out. Some months I can be 0, other months I could, you know, download 3 books. So it really depends. That is it. That's the plug. Love them. Have loved them for years. And my entire audiobook collection is housed on Audible. Of course, an Amazon company, which is awesome. That means they're going to be around forever. Audible.com/Kevin Rose. Also, the last thing I will say is that I had the audio source set up incorrectly. So I apologize for my audio. Thankfully, Alex talks quite a bit during this episode and his audio is great, but mine not so much. So we did our best, and next time we'll definitely have that fixed. All right, let's get into the show. This is Talkin' Tech with Alex Albrecht.
How's being a dad?
It's, you know, here's the deal. Dude, I will say this. Mm-hmm. I know you and I have talked about this a lot.
Yes.
In the past.
Over many years.
And I, you know, there's a reason we waited until I was 40. You know, it's like we waited a long time, wanted to have good old time, and thought that this was just going to be a lot of work, which of course it is.
Yep.
Yeah, it's funny because, like, you always hear these dads and I'm like, it's so special, it's amazing. Yeah. And the first couple months, you're just like, holy shit, my world is upside down.
Yeah.
Like, it's like nothing is normal. Like, sleeping hours, you can't drink. There's like so many things that are changing, right? But then I got to say, like, right now or 8 months in, it's pretty freaking rad. It is now just awesome. I mean, the guy doesn't do a whole lot the first few months, you know, like they're nursing the entire time and they're sleeping. Yeah. So it's like hard to have, like, of course you love them and they're cute and all that, but like, it's not like you have like a real one-on-one relationship yet. Right.
Right. Your role hasn't really kicked off.
Right. Exactly. So the thing that's changed is, like, when I walk in the room now, she like lights up and she's crawling now. So she bolts towards me. And like,
amazing.
How are you not going to stop and just pick up this little human that is like so excited to see you, you know?
Yeah, right. Totally.
So it's really cool, dude. It's really special. It's different. It's, you know, it's kind of like the first time you smoke weed or something. Like you don't know what to expect. And then all of a sudden you're like, whoa, okay, this is
like,
different
this
than
is
I thought.
Awesome.
Yeah, well, but it's different than you thought it was going to be, right? Because like you have all these ideas of what it might feel like.
Yep.
And then
yep.
you actually get in there and you're like, whoa, okay, it is different. So
yeah, so it's different than you expected, but still awesome.
Right. But still a lot of work. Like there's work to be done. Diapers to be changed. Like shit changes for sure.
Yep. And then just wait until she's a teenager.
Right. I know. That's a whole nother can of worms.
Yeah.
So, dude, what's new with you? We haven't caught up in forever.
Oh, man. You know, just doing crazy things.
Are you still Bitcoin in mining?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So this is all going on the podcast, but so I don't know how much you want to talk about.
We should do a catch-up phone call after the podcast just to talk.
Do you openly talk about your Bitcoin mining or no?
Yeah. In as much as I can. I mean, not that anything's holding me back. Look, I was really happy to see the big dip.
No, you weren't. Nobody was happy to see.
No. I'll explain why, right? I was actually happy to see the big dip. You know, I mean, look, we ended the year at almost 20,000. I think it was up to 20,000. That was awesome. You know, I think that, you know, when your hairdresser is saying, oh, I think I should invest in Bitcoin, you're like, oh, okay, there's going to be a dip, right?
Right.
The reason why I'm happy that it dipped, because it went down to like a little under 6 at the worst I saw it, and then popped back up. I think it's at 8,000 now or something like that, 8,200, something like that. The reason why I love those dips is because that is the time that every single time I've gotten into Bitcoin, I've gotten out of Bitcoin, right? And we talked about this a little bit. Oh, maybe we didn't talk about it on the last thing, because the last time we did this was when you reignited my Bitcoin excitement, right?
Right.
So I realized every single time I heard about Bitcoin, right? Like, we first heard about Bitcoin when it was like 75 cents a coin, right? And we were like, oh, this could be the future. It's going to be,
Right.
And then it was like, well, it's never going to get higher than this. And so I was like, I'm bored. I'm out of it, right? Then I started mining a while ago when it was like $125 a coin. And I just was like, okay, so it's $125 a coin. Like, I'm making like a Bitcoin here, a Bitcoin there. Like, I spent, you know, $2,000 building a rig and I've only made $900, you know, because I was making a Bitcoin a month, right? I mean, right. Think about that, right? Like, not too shabby today or when it was right. 20K. But then I just kind of lose interest and I'm like, well, it's never going to get any higher than $120 a coin, right? So I realized that when we were talking and it was like, I think like $4,000 a coin, something like that, when we were talking last year.
That sounds right.
Yeah, I realized, I was like, all right, I'm going to get into this mining stuff. And that's when you told me about all the mining boxes and I kind of started digging into it. And I was like, okay. And then, you know, met my buddy who's like, we can do this. Let's actually do a bigger play here and actually buy a bunch of these things. And so I was like, yeah, all right, all this is making sense. I realized, had I just said, no matter what happens, I don't care what the price of Bitcoin is, I am going to continue doing this. Like, I'm just going to continue doing, like, I put my investment in, which was buying the boxes, and we have a bunch of them, and, you know, paying rent, paying electricity, all this stuff. And I was like, there will be a time at which I want to not be doing this. And I am going to push through that time.
You mean like due to the price, like it falls and you're like bummed out?
Yep. Yep.
Okay.
Like this drop down to like 5,900 was when my gut was like, oh yeah, this is the time, like all the other times, that I would be like, screw this, I'm out. And then in 2 years, when it's $100,000 a coin and that all of a sudden makes news and people are like, dude, you hear about Bitcoin's going crazy? And I'm like, wow, if I just stayed in it for two years, you know what I mean? So this time, no matter what happens, so the only caveat on that is, and we almost got close, which is, you know, we're making enough money to cover our expenses, even when it got down to like 5,900 or whatever. I think one of the bills we paid in Bitcoin that we had, like rent and electricity and all that stuff, was like down at 6,200, right? We're still not putting more money in, meaning we're mining enough to cover our costs. I will stay at that level of mining basically what covers our costs indefinitely. Like, I just go, great. I'm not selling any of my coin.
Where do you keep it? You keep it in what kind of wallet do you use?
It depends. I have a company wallet on Coinbase, and that's where all the mining stuff. Because the other thing that's really interesting is we did a huge deep dive into, hey, what does it mean tax-wise when you mine Bitcoin? And it's not great.
Because you get hit with capital gains the second that coin appears in your
wallet, it's plain income when it hits the wallet. The good news is that, you know, so we actually formed a corporation. Me and my two business partners formed a corporation, and that corporation does the mining, and it's a partnership so that we get dividend payouts in Bitcoin so that we can have the corporation pay some of the costs associated with it. So I think we're probably about 2 years away, unless something crazy happens in a big spike. We're about 2 years away from actually needing to pay taxes on it, because we're just basically depending, you know, because all the stuff that we paid in to make it happen. But it got to a point where we were like, okay, this is like a thing. But so I was like, you know, to me it was like, okay, so anyway, so that's why I have that stuff in Coinbase because it's like, yeah, that's Coinbase. I have an Exodus wallet that I had just to do some stuff like on my computer with just a little bit of like, oh, I had some crazy, you know, essentially I was like, these things are all scams, but I'm going to try them.
The wallets?
No. Some of the like those like scam things like,
the other,
I mean, I hate to say, I hate to call them scams, but there was stuff that I was like, this is too good to be true.
You had a buddy that bought into that one big one. They went bankrupt, right? That one scam. You were telling me about it. You were all pumped on it. How he was getting paid dividends.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, what the hell was it called? I mean, it's one of those things that's like, I can't remember what it was called, but it was one of those things where it was sort of like you're paying in and then they are like, we have an automated trading system that makes money. And so we just need your investment stuff. And I know, well, but, and the crazy thing is, it's like those things work until they don't. I, you know, didn't lose tons of money, but I've had some money that was just sort of play around. Let's see what happened. And, you know, one of them, I think I made a little bit of money. One of them, I lost a little bit of money. And then I kind of ended up just sort of breaking even. And, but I was doing that with the Exodus wallet because I was like, this is going to be moving around a bunch.
Yeah.
And I'm not expecting to make a bunch of money. It was just sort of something fun to play with. You know what I mean? And then I was just like, yeah. So my Exodus wallet has zero money in it. I just still have it because why get rid of it? You know what I mean?
What's the deal with the halvening that they talk about coming up in like a year and a half?
So you know the whole thing with Bitcoin. There's 21 million Bitcoin that will ever be found. And we're at about 16.8 million right now. What ends up happening is when they first started it, when you unlocked a block, it was, I believe, 100 Bitcoin.
That's insane.
That are released in a pure block. What happened is every 2 years, there's a halving of that. So as the difficulty increases, right? There's this also thing that's happening where every 2 years, the amount of Bitcoin that is unlocked is halved. So like it went from 100 to 50, and then it went from 50 to 25, and then it went from 25 to 12.5, which is where we are now. So every time a block is unlocked, 12.5 about, there's also all these fees and stuff like that, but approximately 12.5 Bitcoins are released from that block. That is going to be cut down to whatever, 7.5.
Crazy. So is the price going to go up typically after the halvenings happen?
You know, the funny thing is I don't know how that's going to work. I mean, it's sort of weird because I haven't looked back to see how the price has. I mean, the price has been so crazy. Like if you look back, you're like, oh, it's, you know, 8,300. And like when it started, it was like half a penny. I mean, it's so crazy. And it's just one of those things where you're like, you know, there's that thing, that guy who had the laptop that had like 150 Bitcoin on it and he threw it away.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like there's just all these things.
Yeah.
I mean, hell, back in the day, somebody gave you like 1,000 Bitcoin, right? Like,
I mean, it wasn't 1,000, but it was a lot. It's enough to cry these days.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's where I got this mentality of, you know what? I'm just going to sit on it. You know, I don't need the money. It's just a fun thing. But also I gave my nieces for Christmas, I gave them all what was at the time like $175 worth of Bitcoin on one of those
little USB keys or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I can't remember which one it was. But so basically I was like, just take this, put it in a safe, think of it as like a US bond, you know what I mean? When they're 16 and they're like 2, 2, and 1. You know, so I was like,
I've heard about a lot of people doing this, and the main concern is you have to worry about the parents like stealing it.
Look, if that's the concern, I'm all right.
I'm just saying, what are you doing? If you give some kid that's won like a Bitcoin and it goes up to like a $500,000, you can't tell me the parents are going to be like, you never had that.
Yeah. I hope not. But also I hope that happened. I mean, I was like, look, at the end of the day, if like, you know, that like whatever, I can't even remember what it was, how much it was that I gave them in Bitcoin. It was like 0.015. You know, if it ever gets to the point where they're 16 and they can buy a car with that, that's pretty badass.
That's amazing.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. All right. Plus, I will be very wealthy if that happens because of my plan. My plan is hold all my Bitcoin, keep mining until I have $10 million worth of Bitcoin, and then sell 5 and just keep doing
it. Okay, I was going to say, you're not going to just cash out.
No, the whole point will be every time I get $10 million in Bitcoin, I just cash out five, pay the taxes, put it in the bank, and then I just wait. And dude,
you are pretty convinced like this is going to happen.
Well, it's not that I'm convinced it'll happen.
No, I just love that you like nonchalantly just say like, you know, every time I get 10 million, just cash out
every
five.
Couple years, like, you just like, cash just, like, out your five. It's the way. This is my retirement fund. No, but the funny thing is like this is what I always said to Heather. I was like, here's my idea. I'm going to do this. I'm put, you know, a little bit of money into sort of startup costs, right? And then I'm just going to keep it going. I'm not going to put any more money in. I'm just going to keep it going. And, you know, when I get to $10 million, I'm going to cash out five, and then I'm going to keep going. $10 million, cash out five. And I was like, that is a dumb idea. That is a silly thing to say when Bitcoin is $8,000, right? But it was also a very dumb idea when Bitcoin was $1,500. It was really dumb idea when Bitcoin was $115. And it was a stupid ass idea when Bitcoin was $8. Had I had that thought at any of those stages that I was interested in Bitcoin, I would have hundreds of millions of dollars right now. And so for me, I just went.
You and me both, dude. We were dumb.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, how could you know? You know what I mean? Like, there were very few people, I think, that really leaned into it and succeeded. You know, I mean, they made a hell of a lot of money. But so anyway, so that's why even now I'm like, yeah, it sounds dumb when I say it out loud. But at the same time, I'm like, looking back in 5 years, if it's like, you know, $100,000, I mean, people are saying like, oh, yeah, $100,000, easy breezy, you know, blah, 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 blah. I mean, what's the level? I think it's 189,000 or 187,000 is the point at which you can't break a Bitcoin down into a dollar, or is it a penny?
Oh, because of the decimal places?
Yeah, there's an actual number at which you can't break Bitcoin down into either, it's either a whole dollar or a penny. I can't remember what it is, but essentially it's like if it's really going to be used as like a dollar replacement, like a currency replacement, which by the way, I don't think it is right now. I think it's more akin to gold than it is to actual tangible money. Even though it can be used like that, I think it's going to be a long time before the volatility just has to calm down before anybody's going to buy. You know, I mean, like we're having that right now. We're having that anxiety right now because with our partner in the mine, like we'll get a bill for the electricity or we'll get the rent and the upkeep and stuff like that. And it's like, we can pay that bill in Bitcoin. We have 7 days to pay it. If we pay that the first day it comes in, there's a chance that on the seventh day we've overpaid, right? Like, right. But there's also a chance that if you wait, so we're having this really weird like anxiety over the price based on when we have to pay our bills, you know? Yeah. And it's really funny because I was like, yeah, and that's like a regular thing. But like, if it was my rent, I'd be like, oh, I mean, like my personal house rent, I'd be like, oh man, I hope that bill comes in now because Bitcoin's taken a, you know, up by 1,000 just today. And it's like, by tomorrow, if like PG&E bill comes in for my house, it's like, and so it's like, I don't see it until it settles out and is really sort of like a slow thing. I don't see it being an actual currency.
Yeah. I mean, this is the issue with a bunch of things that I've been involved in terms of paying cryptocurrency.
Yeah. You got into all sorts of currencies, right?
Yeah. God, man, I did so many of them. And it was like, you know, too much. I decided to really pull back and just focus on one. There's this like one hedge fund that's in the valley that I let them deal with all the ICO crap and just like they kind of go off and like you invest in them and they go and buy it. It's similar to kind of what Coinbase is doing now. They have their own little fund.
Oh, do that? I didn't know that.
Yeah, Coinbase has their own little fund where you can invest in it and essentially they will, anytime they add a new coin to Coinbase, they will automatically buy it for you and rebalance your account.
Oh, interesting.
So, yeah, it's cool. It just came out maybe, I don't know, a few months ago. Just letting someone else think about that problem. And the other thing is I have also been buying Bitcoin over the last couple months. And the way that I'm doing it, rather than like speculate and look at the price and like worry about it, the one thing I do like about Coinbase, and I hate this to be an ad for Coinbase because neither one of us hold any Coinbase stock or anything.
No.
But one thing I do is I set up the automatic daily purchase. And so that dollar cost averages in for me. So I'm not buying it high, I'm not buying it the low, but I'm buying a little tiny chunk every single day.
It's really funny that you bring that up. When I did BlizzCon last year, was after we talked and I was sort of getting really into it. It's last November. And I'm one of the guys, because I was just telling everybody, like, just buy Bitcoin and hold it for 5 years and forget you own it, right? I mean, honestly, that's what I was saying. It was like, take 10% of whatever your savings is or whatever your like investment long-term stuff is, just like 10 to 5%, you know, buy Bitcoin, just fucking put it over in the corner and forget about it, right?
Yeah.
This guy who's one of the ADs there, he was like, yeah, for the last 6 months, so he started in like June, he was like, I have a Coinbase account and every year or every month it takes, I think it was like either $500 or like $150, something like that. He was like, every month I buy like $500 worth of Bitcoin and I just keep it going. It just keeps, it's just, you know, it's
yeah,
like,
why not?
Yeah. He's like, look, I have $500 a month that I can invest in something, right?
Right.
This is cool. I don't have, again, just like you, I don't have to think about it. I just, my holdings kind of grow. And then if something crazy happens with Bitcoin, I get to capture some of that upside. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah. I mean, there's only 20, like you said, there's only 21 million coins. They're not printing new ones after yeah. that. So it's yeah. like, all it takes is 21 million people all holding one coin and say that this I'm not selling until it hits $1 million.
Right. Yeah. And then one guy who's like, I want more of them and here's $1 million and boom.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. Let's talk other tech stories though. The one that I thought was the coolest that I was kind of collecting over the last week or so has to be the fact that Larry Page, the CEO of Google, is buying, he's like amassing a flying car like fleet.
Yeah.
So have you seen these flying cars?
You know, here's something that's interesting. Over the summer, which is a couple months ago, I actually got to hear the CEO and founder of Kitty Hawk give a speech about autonomous flying cars.
Yeah. What did you think?
I want one. I want, as soon as he started talking, I was like, I want one. I want one. And he started his speech by saying, like, you know, a couple years ago, I was talking to a bunch of you guys about autonomous vehicles and how the autonomous car was going to be the wave of the future. And he was like, I'm wrong. He was like, it will be autonomous flying cars. And everybody's like, what? So it does not surprise me that Larry Page is getting into this.
Dude, there's like four of them that are competing. I don't know if you've checked out the different one. I did see the Kitty Hawk one.
Yeah, Cora or whatever it's called.
Yeah, the problem I have with the Kitty Hawk one is that the blades are like at neck level. And I just, you know, it's like,
blades are at
So there's four, for people that haven't seen this thing, on the Kitty Hawk one, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It looks like there's like 8 like drone-like blades that are going around the outside of it.
Yeah, 12 for vertical liftoff. But the whole point with the Kitty Hawk thing that I think is really smart is that unlike the other one, like the one that just came out was the...
The Flyer is the one I'm talking about. The Kitty Hawk one looks way safer. So the Flyer one, the blades are right at your neck.
Yeah, so yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying. Like you're literally exposed to the blades while flying in it.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't like the idea that like I set it down wrong or I hit a tree and like the blade goes straight into my neck. Like it looks dangerous.
That actually does. And the funny thing is so Flyer is actually the precursor to the Cora. So Flyer was the Kitty Hawk's version of like, can we make this? Right?
I see. And same so company though.
Same company. Yeah, same company. So what they did was, and I think is a really cool concept, is essentially they were like, look, we can get the lift with these like drone things, like we all know what the quadcopter looking blades. But once you get the lift, well, if you're gonna go forward, there's like a ton of aerodynamic history of helicopters not being the most efficient for moving right. forward, that really you want a fixed wing. So what they were like, well, what if we just put on a fixed wing? It's almost like an F-22 or sorry, the F-35 with vertical takeoff or the Osprey. So you basically take off straight up and down using the quadcopter-ness stuff.
Right.
And then as soon as you get into the air, it's like turns the quadcopters down and then a giant like regular airplane propeller starts
right.
going.
It's like those helicopters that they've had along back in the day, you know, like
yeah, the Ospreys,
they
have the wings that point, they like turn, rotate,
right,
and they're a helicopter,
exactly.
And then they rotate forward and they fly.
Dude, check out the Opener. Have you seen the new one? This just got announced. It's opener.aero is the website. Did you see this one? They have something called the Black Fly.
Yeah. So talk to me about this. I saw a video about this, and I was like, what? I don't understand it. Like, what's with the like rocking boat bottom? Like, it's cool.
I think
looking,
it can land
on
water as well. But this one rotates like you're saying, and then it kind of like just goes like if you watch the little video further down, you'll see it just like stalls. It's so cool.
So first off, here's the thing. A, I want all of these, right? like I just want them all. So, but B, you know, when you start to really dig into this and you realize really the hop, skips, and jumps are the issues for most major cities, right?
Right.
So like a great example is you talk about going from Brooklyn to Manhattan, right? Right. There's one or two tunnels, one or two bridges. That's it. Everybody wants to go in during the day. You're screwed, right? But if you can just pop over that waterway, it's not very far. It's just you can't drive across it. So then it's like, well, what if you had, instead of a metro station, right, you had personal aircraft stations. So think about it like Uber, but all Uber, you know, Uber for personal aircraft, but all the aircraft is doing is you're getting in it on the at a Brooklyn parking lot and it's dropping you off at a Manhattan parking lot or on the top of a Manhattan building. Like that is all it's doing. That to me is like game changer.
No, I agree 100%.
And it's same with like, oh, it's like same with San Francisco. Like think if you could be in San Jose and get in one of these things at a parking lot, and all of a sudden you're in the city center, you know?
I'm sold. I want one of these. I think they're amazing. The issue is that obviously they're going to be really expensive to begin with.
No, but the guy from Kitty Hawk, that's one of the things he said. He was like, there's not a ton of tech in these things. Like the tech is, these electric motors are actually really cheap. And the battery technology has gotten pretty cheap. They make their Cora handmade, and they cost $100,000 to make.
I mean, that's still expensive, but yes.
No, but that's handmade. So he's like, by the time these are like fully operational and we're actually direct to consumer for them and we have some stuff, he was expecting them to be $35,000.
That's doable.
Right?
So but the only thing with these things is because they are so lightweight, they only hold one person, right? Like I haven't seen one that holds two people.
No, Cora is two. Cora is two people.
Cora is two.
Yeah, it's a two-seater. And the thing with Cora that I think is really interesting is that it's going to be autonomous. So the whole thing will be you'll get in and type in like where you want to go and it will take you, like it'll lift you off from your backyard. Because if you think about it, like with the drones, if you lose sight of your drone, you just hit the come back button. Or if it loses connectivity, it uses GPS and all the stuff of where it took off from, and it will just fly itself back and land.
Right.
So that technology, you know, it is super easy to do. Like that's already a thing, right? And so think about like getting in, like, you know, you and Daria could be like, we're going to dinner, and you could just hop in and be like, here's the restaurant. And either A, it will take you to the restaurant, right? Or B, it will take you, I think more likely, it will take you to the closest Cora landing place.
Right. Or restaurants will start to outfit their roofs and things like that with landing
100%,
stations.
100%. Yeah. When this all starts up, all the buildings' helipads are going to be open for business because it's like, why wouldn't you? Plus, because of the fact that I think some of these have the distances actually pretty far. Like one of them, I think the Cora one was like 80 miles or something like that on one single charge. So you could even see, especially if your home landing pad, quote unquote, and you don't need much space because they just go vertical straight up and down, right? But maybe your home landing pad is a charging pad, right? And so what ends up happening is...
like an iPhone, you just set it on the edge charges.
Yeah. And if it's
like
autonomous, maybe what happens is they take you to the restaurant, drop you off on the helipad, it bounces back home.
Yeah,
right?
Or just goes to the nearest charging station.
Or goes to the nearest charging station. Yeah, or nearest like Cora parking spot. You know what I mean? I think it's going to be a really interesting thing. But also, you know, everybody is like, oh, but then the whole city is just going to be a buzz with all these things. But it's like there's a hell of a lot more airspace than there is land driveway space. You know what I mean? Like it would be a long time before we're in the like Blade Runner. So much stuff being happening at once, you know what I mean? All that stuff. But
now what happens if you clip one of these like blades or something goes wrong?
So that's one of the reasons why a lot of them have multiple blades is just redundancy, right? Like you can lose.
How many can you lose? Like half of them?
I don't know. I can't remember if he said anything, but there's 12 on the thing. I mean, you're highly unlikely to lose, to have an engine failure on more than one of them. And if you have an engine failure on more than one of them, it's probably highly likely it's two, not four, right? I don't know. The other thing is they're equipping some of them. The Korra one, they're working on this parachute thing.
Yeah, I saw that. That's kind of cool.
Which we talked about that freaking way back on the day in Dignation. Remember the plane that came out? I can't remember if it was a Piper.
Yeah.
Remember there was that plane. It was like a little small plane that came out and had a parachute.
Dude, that's like standard now.
Yeah.
Like they're doing on prop planes, on smaller prop planes, not on jets, obviously, but like, I love that. I love that idea.
Yeah, I mean, why not? It's just like, chances are it's not going to explode or, you know, it's not going to crash, but why not have a parachute? It's like, yeah, all right, I'll pay for a parachute.
The crazy thing is in like, you know, 30 or 40 years when we're like really old men, this is just going to be the norm. Like people are just going to jump in these things, buzz off, and like, it's crazy where this is all going.
Well, that's the thing that I think has been really interesting growing up in the sort of tech age that we live in, right? Which is how quickly things have accelerated and how little it seems like we live in the future.
Right.
Like if you told me, oh, you're going to have this device in your house and you can just ask it things and it'll do it, I'd be like, no, that's the future. But I have my freaking Amazon Echoes all over the place and I ask it to turn on the lights every morning.
I feel like things are accelerating. Do you get that sense? Like, I feel like we were in like Windows 95 days for like forever. And you're like, these drivers aren't installing right. And then all of a sudden, like our computers are like, you know, checking our blood pressure and shit when we walk through the room. It's like things are changing rapidly.
Yeah.
Don't you get that sense too?
I do. Well, one, I'm interested to see, I'm interested to know if you're sensitive to it now because you're a dad, right? Because now you're like looking at a sort of extra lifetime in the future. You know what I mean?
Sure.
But it's totally true. Like, I feel like we were in, you know, 99 to 2001 for like 10 years. You know what
right.
I mean? Like,
yeah.
That period of time is just like
even
so
until
long.
Like, just, I swear, like 2 years ago is when shit started getting cool because it was just all kind of like the same, you know?
You know what it, for me, what it was that really started it off was the Tesla.
Yeah, the Tesla, I agree.
Like, when I finally got a Tesla and I could do the autonomous driving light, which I know it's light, but still, it's better than my other cars.
I just got my first Tesla like 3 weeks ago. I got the X.
Oh, what do you think of the X?
I love it. It's great. They worked out all the bugs. And when you're doing self-driving mode for the first time, one, it's scary as hell.
Yeah,
but
it takes some time.
It's also amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a weird moment because you're like, I guess I should be like really paying attention here. But at the same time, it's like, I could just like let it do it, right? But then after about like 20 minutes you're like, I'm barely even
checking your phone.
Yeah. I was like looking up houses and watching videos and shit, and I'm like, this is dumb, with my eyes on the road ish
of course, kind of holding the wheel.
Yeah,
like for me the Tesla was a big one. Also, like just the smart assistant stuff.
Yeah.
The Google smart assistant has gotten really crazy good. Like it reads through my emails now and automatically adds shit to my calendar.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's so smart about like sending me little prompts when my plane is late now and telling me when to leave with traffic. And it's like a, you know, an order of magnitude better than anything that Apple has done on that front.
Yeah.
So that's been really impressive in the last couple of years.
Have you gotten into, because I know you oscillated a lot where you would always be like, I hear that the Google, like the Android operating system is good. I'm going to try it again. And it never stuck. Are you on the Google stuff now?
So Android P, the latest one, I've been using it a lot. I have it on my Pixel 2.
Yeah.
I will say that it's so close. It's so close. You know what they don't have? Here's what I'll tell you. I will say what I love about Google.
Yeah.
The AI stuff, phenomenal. All the recommendations, the traffic stuff, the telling me what's going on, amazing.
Yeah.
That just destroys anything. Like I was like, the one thing I asked Google the other day, I was like, how many MVPs does, you know, I can't remember, Steph Curry or something like that happen. Like, it knew that. And you ask Siri the same thing. I did a little test now and Siri's like, here's some web results that I found.
Oh yeah, no, Siri is bullshit.
Yeah, so I love all that. The one thing I will say I love the most on Android is the fact that 1Password is tied into the OS. So when you go to like an app that needs your password, it just pulls it out of 1Password.
Oh, it's amazing. That's interesting.
So it just logs you into everything automatically.
Oh, that's smart. Yeah, they finally got on that bandwagon with the Apple TV, where you can do you log into your service provider in the Apple TV. And not everybody does it, but they now allow stuff. So like you go to HBO Go, you don't have to sign in 1,000 times. Right. Especially with typing stuff on the Apple TV. But that's interesting that it has it integrated with 1Password.
Yeah, that saves you just a ton of time, especially because now we all don't use like simple, easy passwords anymore. Like all my passwords are like 30 characters and shit. So it's
I know. And they keep adding technology to make it hard. I'm like, Jesus, guys, like I get it. I wish there was. I find this very interesting. I like the Face ID for, the iPhone X. I miss the thumb because you have to be looking straight at it.
Yeah, and the finger is so fast. I use it on the Android. And
it's
so much faster.
It's faster, but also like there are times when you can't tilt the phone flat to your face. You know what I mean? When you've got it down, you're sort of holding it weird or you're just trying to do stuff. But also I really do feel like the operating system in the Apple stuff has sort of taken some steps back. There's the tap, which is like does something. Then there's the sort of tap push. No, you know that there's like the push in to the thing.
Oh, and the force touch.
Yeah, but then there's like a harder one, and it's not clear when you use what. So I'm constantly like tapping on something, and nothing happens.
Dude,
and then I'm like
whole
pushing it, and it's like nothing
happens. That was some old man shit if I've ever heard.
No, it's just bad UI.
The tap. You know when you tap, you can't tap in.
Yeah, it's true. I'm literally like, what the fuck? I'm like, the best example is like somebody sends me a message and it's got a phone number, right? There is a specific amount of pressure that I am supposed to put on that phone number.
A light little tap and copy. That's what you're trying to do. Copy it, right?
No. You hit the button and it goes call. But
that's if you tap. No, I'm talking a nice little tappy hold, like a little tiny bit.
Yeah, but I don't. I want to just touch the thing and have it fucking call.
It does.
No, it does if you use the right amount of pressure. But it's not clear how much pressure. I'm constantly hitting those numbers two or three times before I can call.
Something's wrong with your phone.
Oh, my phone's also fucked up.
So listen, the one thing I will say back to the Android thing is the messages, dude. The messages suck on Android.
That's you mean like only text messages?
Yeah, like the green bubble stuff is just like so brutal.
iMessage really is great. The other thing is it's just the install base, right? Like I always sort of look down my nose a little bit when I text somebody new and it goes whoop and it's green. I'm like, oh, come on. Really? Like, you're one of those people? And then, God forbid, they're in a multi-person chat. And I'm like, this is going to fuck that person's phone all
right.
up. You know what I mean? Right. Like, there's like three of the people in this four-way text are going to be cool. The other one is going to be like, oh, I missed this. Oh, I didn't see the time. Oh, I blah, blah, blah. And you're like, just get a freaking Mac. Come on.
Well, they've been talking about, so this is a rumor that came out here a couple months ago, that there are actually, there's a version of iMessage internally at Apple running on Android right now.
Oh. Did they also fix the visual voicemail thing? Because I always felt like Apple had like a +1 on visual voicemail to anything that I've ever done.
Yeah.
Did they? Okay, good.
So here's my question is, if you're Apple, okay, you've got, you realize one thing. You're losing one battle. You're losing the battle of the masses. You're losing India in a big way.
Right.
China in a big way.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you realize that growth, future growth, is going to have to come from these markets. You don't have a phone that's cheap enough to go into those markets. Android's crushing you, right?
Yeah.
So if that's the case, the one thing you could do is you could roll out iMessage as like a way to kind of get in there and get people to have lock-in on your proprietary messaging protocol.
Yeah.
And like have that be, because if you think about it, a lot of things are happening in messages these days in terms of commerce.
Baked into text. You can just send somebody money.
Yeah. So the question is like, do you roll that out for Android or do you keep it? Because also that having that proprietary, I know for me, keeps me on an iPhone.
Yeah,
otherwise,
totally.
I'd probably go to Android.
Yeah, interesting.
So what do you see what I'm saying? Like, it's a tough call, right?
Yeah, well, it depends upon what your model is, right? Like, are you trying to figure out what the – I mean, are you going to go the way of the iPhone 6C and try to just make a crappier version of the iPhone to sell in emerging markets, that doesn't feel like an Apple move. You
it
know what I mean?
Feel like Apple move, yeah.
So it does make sense, especially when you can do like the stickers. Like there's so much stuff that you can buy. And by the way, that's how people are consuming stuff. Like Fortnite, which is the big video game from Epic. I don't know if you watch any of the Fortnite stuff. It's like the most popular game right now. It started as a pay video game, just like, you know, whatever, 60, 70 bucks. You buy it, you play the video game, single player, multiplayer kind of a thing. And it was okay. It was a failure at launch, right? They pivoted and said, what if we do it a free-to-play battle royale style? So like PUBG, I mean, it was basically a PUBG knockoff, although PUBG technically was a knockoff of DayZ and H1Z and one and all that stuff. Anyway, the whole point is it switched to a free-to-play model where you're buying vanity items like skins, right?
Right.
In June, they made $325 million in June.
That's insane. All skins? All it could be weapons upgrades or anything?
No. Nothing that makes you better at the game. Just skins. Skins, emotes, there's like dances that you can unlock. It's crazy, man. It is crazy. They are printing money. But so if you look at iMessage and you can buy those like sticker packs and things like that, it's like, yeah, maybe that would be a smart move for Apple to get those things embedded into the Android operating system. The problem is Apple, you know, will Apple and Google ever sit down and be like, friends? You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's so hard.
Yeah, that's the other thing that's really interesting is, so the issue that Google has is that they can't come out with like a better messenger because you need to have carrier buy-in, because the carriers, like let's just say Samsung or some of these other providers, they can choose which messaging app to include or not include in their OS. So what Google did recently, this was just a couple months ago, is I think they made something like 6 or 8 different major carrier agreements saying we are going to collectively come together and decide upon a modern messaging standard and standardize something so they can have a modern chat that isn't like old school SMS, which I think is a great move. But yeah. So it's kind of like it's Apple's call here. Like they have to make a decision. Do they go out first and like do a little preemptive strike and release iMessage on Android? Because that would just own the market overnight.
Oh, 100%. If that actually happened, I mean, even if they just made it in an app, you know what I mean?
Oh, that's all they would have to do, because you can take over the messaging. You can tell Android, take over the messaging and use this as the default.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so you can't do that with Apple.
No. Hell no. You know how long it took them for me to be able to be like, can my default maps be Google Maps, please? Because Apple Maps suck.
Can you do that?
I feel like that was an option a couple gens of iOS ago.
I mean, I use Google Maps. But I don't know that you can set it as a default, though, can you?
Well, I mean, I do still do the copy and move it over. Maybe it's that they didn't have Google Maps. I can't remember. There was something that you could set to be the default in the iOS that I was like, oh, good for you guys. Maybe it wasn't that. I can't remember.
It might have been mail, I think.
Oh, maybe. Anyway, but this is the other thing, too, is like, I really want to do the thing that I find the best. So like one of the complaints that I have, it's not even really a complaint. It's a complaint about all car makers, basically, which is like my Tesla. Why can't I use Waze?
Oh, that drives me nuts.
Waze is 1,000 times better. I'm using it anyway. It's just a shittier experience. And it's not a shittier experience that, you know, because of the map situation. It's a much better map situation. But I was using the Tesla maps to get me somewhere that, because I was like, I'm going this direction, I just can't remember like what the turn is or whatever. But it wasn't like I wasn't trying to go somewhere for time, you know, it was just like, oh, I'll use the maps. And I'm sitting in the car and I'm looking at these maps and I was like, God damn it, if this was Waze, I would be using this all the time. Because it is not Waze, I never use the map in my Tesla. It might as well not even exist in my Tesla.
That's crazy. I use mine all the time.
I mean, I look at it, but I mean, I don't use the navigation stuff, right? Like the map's up and I like look at it. And maybe if I'm like, where's that street? And I might zoom in and be like, oh, it's a block away. But I never use the actual navigation because it's so wrong about the estimated time of arrival, which is the only part I care about. The thing that makes Waze magical is that, I mean, I've done this down to San Diego, right? Where I'll put in that my, you know, leaving from my house and destination is my parents' house in La Jolla. And I'm like 90% of the time, I'm maybe 2 to 3 minutes off what it said when I left LA. That is magic. That is witchcraft. You know what I mean?
You know, sometimes though, the route that it takes you is a little frustrating. I found that Waze gets a little optimizey lately.
Yeah,
like
totally agree.
They'll be like, you know, like,
totally agree.
Turn down the street here, make another left, make another right, make a left, and another left. And you're like, okay, I saved 30 seconds, but that was a pain in the ass to do all those turns.
Yeah.
You know, I'd rather have just sat there for a minute rather than have to do all the little loop-de-loop and roundabouts that they make you go through. But they do save you time.
I totally agree, but I would be okay with not optimizing the route, but giving me the actual destination time, right? So like with the Tesla one, it's like, yeah, I know it's not going to be an optimal route, you know what I mean? But I know that I'm going to get there. I don't trust that I'm going to get there when it says I'm going to get there. So for me, I go, well, I'm never going to use you because all I really care about, I mean, sometimes I know how to get to the place, you know,
right.
It's just, I want to know at what point you think I'm going to get there. That's the part that matters. If they could get that correct, then I'm okay without the optimization stuff.
Well, I would just make sure to keep checking it though, because they keep doing software updates. It has to be getting better, right?
I mean,
one would think.
Yeah, I mean, the last couple times, I mean, I haven't used it in a while. The problem is like you put it, yeah, it's just, you're always kind of like 10 minutes later than you think, 20 minutes later. It's just like, it's just enough to be like, I can't, because I'll look at Waze before I walk out the door to go to a place. Like I'll choose when to leave to go to a place because of Waze.
Yeah, you already know kind of what you're, well, to be off by like 10 minutes is horrible.
Right.
I can understand like a minute or two, but like 10 minutes is nuts.
Yeah.
Dude, so Magic Leap coming out this summer.
I know.
Are you buying one?
No.
Yeah, neither am I.
I mean, I want it to be amazing. I love the idea of augmented reality. I was excited. I mean, shit, we talked about Google Glass many, many times on Dignation. And it's like, for me, I'm like, this is cool. I mean, first off, they look so dorky. I mean, it's like even worse than Google Glass. But I get that.
Yeah, no one's wearing that outside.
No. Well, no, people are going to be wearing them outside and it will be horrible. No. I mean, same with Google Glass. Like, people were wearing those. I was like, what are you doing?
Yeah, dude? But like, they got made fun of so much that they just stopped wearing them. That was part of the reason why that didn't succeed in my mind. One, it was just like really early tech, but it was also just like, you look like such a dork doing it. It's the segue issue.
Yeah, it really
is.
Fun
as hell. Love segues. Good times. You know, you're in some foreign city and nobody knows me. Sure, I'll take one.
Yeah.
Like on a little tourist trip or whatever, that's fine.
Yeah.
But nobody wants to own one of those and go down their streets and be seen with a little helmet on and knee pads and shit. Like,
oh,
it's
my God.
Just not going to happen.
So speaking of which, and then we'll get back to Magic Leap, what is your take on Bird and Lime S and all of the trash that is electric scooters strewn all over the place?
Yes.
First off, somebody is going to get killed. It will happen very soon. Heather almost hit two teenagers going through an alley because they just went right by. So somebody's going to get killed. And we said check this box and promise to only ride it on the street because it's illegal to ride them on the sidewalk, but everybody rides them on the sidewalk. Well, check this box to say that you're wearing a helmet. Who the fuck is walking around with a helmet, right?
Nobody is.
That those companies are going to be out of business in 2 years for sure. Like, because somebody is going to die. That is going to happen. And it's going to happen sooner rather than later. I'm actually surprised it hasn't happened yet.
So here's what happened. In San Francisco, about, a year ago, I started seeing these little scooters appear on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
And I was like, one of these little things, you know, like people are taking these things everywhere. Like there's... And at first they look really dorky, but then there's kind of this thing where if enough people are doing it, you're like, oh, but that could be fun.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then I downloaded the app, got the Bird app, and I walked up to one, scan it with my phone, it unlocks it, it's ready to ride, you know, shows me the battery range it has. And I jumped in, like you said, there's like all these disclaimers, you check the boxes. And I had the same thought that you did. That when I checked it, it's like, do you have a helmet? I'm like, of course I do. I've never seen a single person wearing
it. Never. And by the way,
and they know that.
Oh, there's no way that they don't know that there are 10-year-olds zipping down the street. I mean, just go anywhere. Like, I can walk outside my door and I'll see two idiot 10-year-olds screaming down the sidewalk, zipping in and out of pedestrians, almost clipping people and slamming on the brakes and just having a grand old time.
Have you tried one?
The funny thing is I tried when because it took a while for them to get up to my area in LA. They were in Venice Beach earlier. And I went down and met with a VC guy, just sort of chat about some stuff. And he was the one that sort of was like, oh, have you seen these bird things? And I was like, no, but you follow enough people in San Francisco, you've seen the complaints, right? On Twitter. It's like, oh yeah, those are the things that dirty the streets.
There's a lot worse things that dirty the streets in San Francisco than those birds.
Yeah, no shit. But so he was like, let's try them. And because the cell service was spotty, we couldn't actually activate any of them. We tried it 3 times.
Oh, so you haven't tried one yet?
No.
Oh, they're fine.
I mean, I'm assuming.
You're going to love it.
Yeah, but I feel like I came out of my driveway and there was somebody had strewn one across the back of my driveway. I had to stop, get out of the car, move it to the sidewalk. I mean, it was like, guys, really? Like, how can this be your company? How can this be the use case? This is how you want people to use your item, is to litter and make it look horrible in all of this town.
To be fair, they don't have any control over that.
No, I know,
right?
But that's
the last person that touched it threw it down.
Like, you can't own this company and not drive around and be like, oh my God, that looks so disgusting. And those are all mine. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
You have to know that this is a problem. And I'm just interested to see what happens. But anyway, back to Magic Leap. Very excited. I love the idea of AR. I am excited for when I can just have my regular Tom Ford sunglasses and somebody sends me a text while I'm walking down the street and I see a little bleep in my eye that says, Kevin Rose just texted.
You mean 2030?
Yeah. I don't know, 2030. I think it'll be sooner than that.
That's what you're excited for, is 2030. It's going to be a while. Dude.
Well, yeah.
We're still in the backpack days and the thick. I mean, this is the same thing with VR. We've had this discussion before. Yeah. I think that all this stuff is way too early. But you got to start somewhere.
Well, and that's what. Have you done The Void yet?
No, I haven't.
Yeah. So I haven't done it yet either. But my buddies went down and did the Star Wars experience. So the whole concept with The Void is it's a proprietary VR system. It is a backpack. It's a chest piece, like a BMX chest guard that has force feedback, right? And everything that is in the VR space has a physical representation in the real world. So it is a space that exists solely for you to have a VR experience.
So basically, if they just turn on the lights and you take off the goggles, it's the same thing.
Well, yeah, it's a less pretty version of the same thing. But to the point where you walk up to a door that's like a cool sci-fi door, and they say, like, it says, pull the lever. When you reach out your hand, which is being tracked, you can see your hand in VR go up. And when you grab the lever, there is a lever.
I mean, I think, why? Why don't we just turn the lights on and grab the lever?
Well, because they can't, because like you can be walking, like a perfect example. That one is a Star Wars experience where you're on a giant Star Wars starship and stormtroopers are actually shooting at you. And when you pull the trigger on the laser gun, a laser beam shoots the stormtrooper, right? You know what I mean? Like, that's why you have to have that
layer. Okay, so the stormtroopers, are they real people? Or
no,
they,
stormtroopers are video games. So you're basically playing a video game in VR.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, and it's super cool. And that, I feel like, is where VR makes sense to me today. I mean, I have both the VR helmets. I don't really get into it much. You know what I mean? Like, it feels like a novelty. You know, it's an awesome novelty. It feels fun, but it's like, I'm not going to sit and play World of Warcraft for 10 hours a day with goggles on my face. You know what I mean?
Do people do that?
You can do that, but I don't know if a human being is physically capable of doing that.
Yeah, I mean, it's too bad. I mean, these companies have raised, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars.
Magic Leap, didn't Magic Leap raise like $1 billion or some crap?
I'm sure it's something like that. But like, the scale that you have to get to and believe in for this to work is just not going to happen. It's just not.
Yeah, well, definitely not anytime soon.
You know, like, you have to be selling millions of units. And the entire combined industry doesn't sell that, you know, it's like on the VR side. So
how much are these things? Do you know, did they say how much they're going to be?
They didn't say, I don't think. It just said that they were going to announce it in by, is it summer of next year? Is that right? It says summer.
No, I think it's this summer, dude. This summer. It's coming out this summer.
You think they would announce pricing at some point? They don't have pricing. What's your gut tell you?
Well, they're doing this thing, which is the creator edition. So basically they're like
the more expensive edition for developers.
Yeah. Basically. Yeah. So, I mean, easily $1,000, probably more, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's probably gonna be $1,000 for the SDK edition.
Yeah. I mean,
then consumers like $599 or something like that.
Yeah. I don't know. So the eye tracking thing is kind of an interesting concept, because I guess what it's doing is it's not actually displaying something in front of you, like in the glasses. It's actually projecting it onto your eyeball.
Oh, crazy. Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah. And so I feel like, A, stop putting shit into my eyeballs, but B, like, I hope that's healthy. Hopefully right. It's not lasers and you take things off and you're like, what the hell?
Yeah, that's like the 10 year study that comes out and everyone has eye cancer or something, you know?
It's exactly. You're like, what? I'm interested to see when these actually get released, the videos of people using it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to play with one for sure. There'll be that one person. It'll probably be you, or like I come over to your house. And then that is the sucker that spends the grand. And then you just like everyone goes over and plays with it. And then you decide, like, is this something I actually want to spend my own money on?
I can't imagine there's a world in which I want one in my house. But I also think when I put it on, I'm going to be like, this is amazing. I've seen the future. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I don't think I'm going to get one. And then it's weird because it says that it's an exclusive U.S. carrier partner is AT&T. What? Why does it have to have a carrier partner? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you're out and about and you want to use it over LTE or something, but doesn't it need a desktop computer?
I don't think so, because it's got this like little
pouch.
Yeah. Like, And I think the pouch is the sort of computery thing.
Yeah, because I know that was a backpack at one point.
Yeah.
So I didn't know if that pouch was just like a wireless receiver to back to your computer or.
Yeah. So it says light pack clips to a belt or shoulder pad, similar in power to a MacBook Pro or Alienware PC.
Desktop computer backpack is optional.
Yeah, so the little clip thing says that it's has its own dedicated graphics card. Because also, didn't they announce that they're using the NVIDIA Targa 2X, the 2X processor?
Yeah, I think it was NVIDIA they partnered with.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm interested. Because also, it's like, if you think about it, you don't need to render as much if you're just sort of augmenting the reality rather than completely creating walls and all this stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but at the same time, there's probably more computation power in terms of like figuring out
tracking
and services and stuff.
Yeah,
although iPhones can do that stuff now.
That's crazy. Let's talk about the Surface Go. We could talk about the bendable phone for like 5 seconds. It's stupid. Why do you want a bendable phone?
No, because dude, it gives you. Okay, here's my thoughts.
Pitch me the bendable phone.
Okay, think about this.
Okay.
You're Android and you are an operating system manufacturer. What do you have against the iPhone in terms of a wow factor? Like, yes, your OS is better, you know, in terms of like the AI system and all that crap. We already talked about all that.
Yeah.
But in terms of like the hardware, like the Apple camera is better, the display is beautiful. Like I know Samsung has some great displays, but you know, in order to get someone to move off an iPhone, it truly has to be not just a slight improvement, but a massive leap forward in a different direction. Like for example, if there was a phone tomorrow by Samsung that they announced randomly and it went on sale tomorrow, and I could set it on my desk flat and it projected a 3D hologram in perfect resolution, and like you could tap through it in the air, like you and I would both go out and buy one on day one, right?
Correct.
Because that's just like a crazy leap forward.
Yeah. And where do I order these phones you're talking right, about?
Exactly. So what I'm saying is like this bendable phone, if you look at the picture, did you look at the little
I did.
So, I mean, it's kind of cool, man. It looks like an iPad that you can fold up and put into like a wallet.
Yeah. Yeah, it does look like that.
If there was an iPad that you could fold up and put in your wallet, as a wallet in your back pocket, would you buy one? Yeah, of course you would. Do you imagine going to like the little Starbucks around the corner from your house? Like, to surf the web on that thing?
Yeah, I mean, the short answer is I'm starting to understand. I mean, I'm getting it. 100% agree with you that Android will not be able to sort of capture the average iPhone Apple person without a radical revolution, right? Like,
right.
We have a headphone jack, right? It's like, come on, all right, whatever. You know, I will say, if I could not need to carry my phone because my wallet was my phone, that would be interesting. You know what I mean? Like, if this is like, just think if the screen was actually the inside of a wallet.
Well, this is, I don't know if this is a wallet.
It's not. But I mean, like, no. But I mean, like, but think about, like, if, so you know how everybody has those phone cases that have, like, you know,
the credit cards and stuff.
Yeah, you put credit cards and stuff like that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
If I could fold that up, like, have a case like that and it folds up and I could put it in my pocket just like a wallet, I mean, it's kind of interesting. I don't know. It just feels a little gimmicky. Like, it feels like, and you can bend it. And it's like, but why would I want to bend it? Like, it's cool.
I guess the
question
is, can you sit on it too? Because if you look at you see the diagram,
yeah,
it doesn't look like you can sit on it.
Not at all.
It looks like it would just crush it.
Right, right. So then it's like, well, what's the point? I mean, I guess the point is that you can have a larger screen. It's like screen to pocket ratio is the thing. You know what I mean? But
yeah, because if you think about what are you getting? So you're getting a larger screen. What can you get that with? You can get that with an iPad or any other tablet. So that's not a thing. A larger screen is already a thing.
Right.
So what you're getting is portability and size.
Right.
So if this can truly compress down to the size of a wallet, but it has the screen real estate without seeing, like, you know, a crease in the middle of the phone, like, is it
being
like...
That's the other thing, yeah.
Well, I don't think... I think this will truly be a flexible display, and it will... You won't see that.
Right.
So if you can get the size of an iPad and the form factor of a wallet, I don't know. That's kind of interesting.
That's kind of interesting.
But then again, I'm not like a Note Galaxy guy either.
No,
like those
right.
Those big ones, like, I guess I could kind of get that today with one of those big phones.
Yeah, or like the Plus. I mean, I did love my Plus before I got the 10. I kind of actually miss my Plus. There's a world in which, I don't know, depending on what they come out with next, if they keep with this Face ID thing, I may, there's a world in which maybe I do like the iPhone 10 Plus instead of the iPhone 11. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I think I talked to myself. I think I'm out. I don't want it. You were right.
Ah, I win.
You win that one for sure.
I win the tech talk. Sorry, Samsung.
Yeah. We'll see what it looks like. Let's touch on the Surface Go for 60 seconds. What do you think?
Again, interesting. You know, I haven't tried the Surface really, I don't think. There's a part of me that's interested, but also I feel like...
$399, dude, that's a good price.
I know it's a good price, but it's also...
You get a little trackpad and shit, and you can put a mouse on there.
Yeah.
You love Windows.
I love gaming on Windows, right? I don't know if I love the operating system as an operating system. I've kind of gotten to this point where I'm pretty agnostic now. Like, my laptop is a MacBook Pro. I have an iPhone. All of my tablet things, if I use them, I use iPads, right? So I feel like unless I was getting it for like a portable gaming system, the problem is
not going to do
right. And here's the problem: I buy so much of this tech because I think it's awesome, and then I inevitably sit down in front of my PC and play a video game and surf the web. So it's like, I've had iPads and been like, I got an iPad. Look at me. Woo. But it's like, I never use the iPad. I never use it. Right. Like, if I go poop, I use my phone. If I want to check my email, I check it on my PC. There is no missing opportunity use case for something like an iPad for me. So I go, this is cool and all, but I don't know if I would ever buy one because I've sort of, I kind of got myself into this thing where I was like, I always buy this shit that I'm like, oh, I'm going to love it. And this is how I'm going to use it. And then I never do. So I'm really, I've sort of kind of pumped the brakes on just buying.
That's great.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear you say that. I've actually been the same way. I've tried to live a little bit more of a thoughtful life in that I really think through my buying decisions.
Smart. Yeah.
And there's two ways I've been able to do that. One is adding something to your cart on Amazon, but sitting on it for 48 hours if you don't really need it.
Oh, that's
and then
really
making
smart.
The decision then.
Yep.
But the main one though, for me, like, I'll give you a great example. I wanted a iMac for a podcasting rig.
All right.
I was like, I already have an iMac, you know, it's a couple years old, but like, I went on Apple's website. And the first thing you do is you see the new black one. That's all stealthed out.
Yeah,
and everything.
Of course.
And I was like, looking at that, I was like, oh, that's so awesome. I should just get one of those. And then I realized, like, I'm just adding so much waste by buying these extra things and having to, like, it's just a waste of money and, like, natural resources and all this other crap. I ended up doing this, which is actually pretty cool. I realized when I just sat with my computer, I said, why don't I like this computer? There's two reasons why I didn't like the iMac that I had. Mm-hmm. One, it was just bloated and filled with all kinds of crap.
What?
So I did a fresh, clean install, right? And the second thing I didn't like was that the keyboard and the Magic Trackpad mm-hmm. was nasty. It was a couple years old, had all that, like, you know, gunk that gets in the keys and that crap.
Yeah.
So what I did is I went on Apple's website. I found that they have the replacement keyboard, the stealthed out black one for that expensive Mac. Mm. And I bought that expensive Mac's blacked out keyboard and trackpad.
Yeah.
And so I got out the door for like $150 to $200 total. And I didn't have to buy, you know, a $3,000 computer that I didn't need. And now I have all, like, it feels like a fresh brand new computer, which is great.
That's amazing. I like that idea of going, I know I want a new computer. Why do I not like this current computer? Right. And if the answer isn't, it's too slow, it doesn't have enough memory, it doesn't have a big enough hard drive, then fix those problems because they're all fixable problems. Unless it's, I want the faster processor. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
That's a really smart way to think about it. Yeah. I just got to this point where I had been seeing this for a long time and I wanted to get it, which is it's this griddle. So it's the Blackstone 37 inch or 36 inch propane outdoor griddle. So it's like, it's an outdoor Benihana basically. So ooh. Yeah. And I've been looking at it. And I just was like, this is one of those things. I'm going to fucking buy it. It's going to sit in the backyard. I'm never going to use it.
Yeah. But it's an outdoor Benihana.
Well, let's just say it's sitting in my backyard right now. And I made street tacos. I made Al Pastor pork street tacos, and it was some of the most amazing tacos I've ever had in my life. And we've done steaks on it. I just learned how to make fried rice, homemade shrimp fried rice on it. But
that sounds good.
I was looking at it and thinking about it and watching videos on it for at least a year before I pulled the trigger.
See, that's amazing. If you can do that, then you know that's something you really want and will appreciate, you know, you still want it after a certain amount of time.
Yeah, totally.
It's got great reviews. 5 stars, 2,180 reviews.
It's a great, dude, just look up videos of people doing it. It's like, it's so fun. Plus, like, when you have people over, you can just be like, yeah, I'll just throw some burgers on it, where you like smash the burgers. It's so good. Ugh.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I love it. But it's a good example. But I think it's right. So back to a $400 Surface Go, it's like, yeah, but probably not.
Yeah, that's my whole thing is I'm with you on the iPad front. I just, it's, I have one.
Yeah.
It just never gets used. I do use it in bed every once in a while for like the occasional like HBO Go thing, because I find it easier to hold than just like a big laptop, like running its fan on my legs.
Yeah.
But yeah, I rarely use mine. So.
Yeah, if I'm going to watch TV, we have a TV in the bedroom specifically for like the, okay, it's time to go to bed, but I want to watch a little something. The big thing for me is the thing I'm sort of waffling on right now is the potential of getting rid of DirecTV and just paying for the $40 DirecTV Now app on the iPad.
Oh, dude, get the YouTube TV. It is so good.
Really? YouTube
yes.
TV?
Yes.
Interesting.
It's amazing. The unlimited cloud DVR. The search is Google search, so it actually finds your shows when you're typing in what you're looking for.
Wow. Does it have VOD stuff, or is it all?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Not right now, but like you can tell it like for example, if you like type in Top Gun, it's like Top Gun is not playing, but just hit record, and the next time it does air somewhere, we'll record it for you.
Oh, well, that's kind of cool.
That's cool.
All right, I'm gonna.
And then you can Chromecast, and you can Apple Stream to any of your devices. Check out. Oh, well, they also the Apple TV has its own YouTube TV app.
How much is
it? It's like cheaper than DirecTV, I think.
Does it have sports and stuff?
Oh yeah, that's what I. The only thing, Darren and I don't really watch TV, but we do watch a lot of sports. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you can just go in there, and I just watch all my basketball on there.
All right, I'll check it out.
I found it. I did the comparison. I've tried Hulu TV, which their search is horrible. The DirecTV one was okay, but then like the DirecTV website was really just pissing me off for some reason. It just was not working right. And I don't know. The YouTube TV has been the cleanest interface. Like, just check out the interface. There's a free 30-day trial. You sign up today.
Yeah, I was just looking at that. Do you have a coupon code that I can use?
No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I might actually try it and just be like, okay, don't turn on DirecTV for the next month, right?
Yeah, just install the app on your Apple TV and
yeah.
Then you can just jump right in. Yeah.
Okay. You've convinced me. I convinced you not to be excited about a foldable phone. You convinced me to potentially try YouTube TV, which I never thought I would try.
And I think we're both agreed that we're going to buy flying cars.
Oh. I have one on order. Actually, you know what I did order? I don't think you probably ordered one of these, but I have it coming because it's a limited edition. I'm very excited. It should be here sometime in the next 2 months. I bought one of the Tesla, not a flamethrower, flamethrowers.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Those sold out, though, right away, right?
I bought it on a whim because we were doing the half-hour happy hour on my podcast, and we were recording it, and we were just talking about them. And I was like, they're going to sell out. They're only making, like, 11,000 of them or 10,000 of them or something like that. And I was like, it's only, you know, that was a snap decision. I mean, I know we just talked about not making bad decisions, but
listen, that's just a smart purchase.
So I purchased it. We recorded, I think we were recording at like 5 p.m. And at 9 p.m., I got a text from Allison Hayslip, who was like, holy crap, I was just talking to a friend of mine about this and went to their website. They are now all sold out. So I literally bought it 5 hours before they sold out.
When do you get it?
I could have picked it up in L.A. I just happened to have been out of town. There was an L.A. come by and pick it up. So some people have it, like Justine has hers, and I've seen a couple friends that have them. And
how does Elon is so insane.
I love
it. Who wants the liability for something like that?
Let me just say, I have definitely checked a lot of boxes. We talked about that with Bird. I checked a lot of boxes before they were like, okay, we'll send it to you. And it used to be called the Tesla flamethrower. And now it's literally, they changed the name to Tesla, not a flamethrower, or Boring Companies, not a flamethrower.
That's crazy.
But anyway.
Well, yeah, take some video of that. Put it on Insta when you get it.
Yeah.
Check it out.
Oh yeah. Hell yeah.
Cool. Well, dude, good catching up, man.
Yeah, bro. Thanks for having me on. It's always fun.
Let's do this again soon.
Yeah. Shiz.
Hey everybody, thank you so much for listening to that episode. It was always so much fun to get together with Alex. Miss that dude. Can't wait to get down to LA and have a beer with him because it's just been too long. If you want to help out this show, the best way to do that, I don't have a Patreon account or anything like that. All you have to do is head on over to iTunes and give The Kevin Rose Show a 5-star review. That's the number one compliment that you can do for me, and I would really appreciate that. It gets the show recommended to more people, which means that more people watch and or listen, I guess. And the more people that listen, the better guests we have on the show. And so I obviously want to get really high quality guests and get back into that rhythm here shortly. So head on over to the iTunes store or really your favorite store. So if you get this on Spotify or Google Play Store, whatever store is your store, just really recommend I would recommend a 5-star review. I would appreciate a 5-star review. That's it for this time. Hope you all are well and healthy, and we'll see you soon.